This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I am Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck.
And it's Sadie's Day. And if you're new here, welcome. We've got a lot of new listeners. Thank you, TikTok, or as my sister and I like to call it, BikBok, which is a very long inside joke that I will not tell you right now. But yeah, if you're new here, we are so happy you are here. And fair warning, we giggle a lot.
Yep.
Don't mean it disrespectfully.
No.
And we never, ever, ever joke about the victims, but there is a lot of giggling. There's a lot of joking. It's the nature of our relationship, mm-hmm. but we mean no disrespect. But if that makes you uncomfortable, you are not wrong, and that is valid, but this is going to make you uncomfortable.
Yep. I am the queen of giggle, nervous giggling.
Yeah.
So just know that.
No. So having gotten that out of the way, welcome everybody. It's Sadie's night. And what are you telling us tonight, Sadie?
You ready for this one, everybody?
Yes. I'm on the edge of my seat. Shake it, quicken in my pantaloons.
This is the Moorgate tube disaster.
Oh, no, 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 no.
You're not going to like this one, Court. So the London Underground is a public rapid transit system serving London and some of the counties surrounding the city. The first line opened in 1863, and by 1975, the network contained 250 miles of track, and more than 3 million people use the tube every day. A little side note, it's actually bigger than the New York City.
Oh, I'm sure. I believe it. Yeah, I believe it.
It was one of the safest methods of transport in Britain in 1975. Other than suicides, there were only 14 deaths on the underground between 1938 and 1975. 12 of those occurred in the 1953 Stratford crash. Mm. On the morning of February 28, 1975, 56-year-old Leslie Newson went into work to start his shift as a motorman or driver for the Moorgate line. This line ended at the Moorgate station, which was an interchange between the underground network and the suburban overground services. So those riding the line would eventually have to get off the tube and go on to ride other modes of transport to get to their final destination.
Right.
At the end of the line in 1975 was a red warning light on a tall post to warn the driver to stop. After the light was a sand drag to stop overrunning trains, which was 36 feet long. After the sand drag was a buffer stop, which had once been hydraulic, but the hydraulics had not worked in years.
Oh,
so can you picture that?
Yes.
Okay.
So kind of like a truck, like a semi-truck off ramp,
yeah.
Where if you
go up the hill,
yeah, mm-hmm. hit the sand, buffers you from, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the hydraulic stop should have taken some of the impact of the train, but it didn't work.
It didn't work. Which seems like something that you should have in good working condition.
You'd think so.
Mm-hmm.
The stop was at the end of the tunnel in front of a solid wall. The hydraulic stop was.
Mm-hmm.
Weekly checks were made on all the engines and passenger cars, and the track was checked regularly as well. On the morning of February 28th, Newson came into work with a bottle of milk, sugar, and his rule book and a notebook. He was also carrying 270 pounds, which is the equivalent of about 2,000 pounds today. And I did not do the exchange between mm-hmm. pounds and dollars, but you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had it with him because he planned to buy a used car for his daughter after his shift that day.
And he had milk and sugar, like as a mm-hmm. combined drink?
Yeah, for tea.
Ah, we'll talk course, about it. Of course.
He was said to be acting normally and seemed to be feeling fine. Before his shift began, he had a cup of tea and shared his sugar with a coworker, who said Newson teased him, saying, quote, "Go easy on it. I shall want another cup when I get off duty."
Mm-hmm.
Newson had been a driver for the London Underground for 7 years and had been driving the Moorgate line for the past 3 months. He was known as a careful and conscientious driver who took the responsibilities of his job very seriously. In the 13 days leading up to February 28th, Newson had successfully driven the Moorgate line 121 times. The first trips of the day started at 6:40 a.m. The guard scheduled to work the Moorgate line with Newson, he was 18-year-old Robert Harris, who was running late but managed to join the train when it returned to Moorgate Station for the first time at 6:53 a.m. With Newson and Harris on the train together, they successfully completed the route three times. During this time, Harris said he became bored and left his position at the guard's control panel, which contained the controls for the emergency brake.
Oh, don't do that. The kid, this is the kid or the...
Yeah, so Harris is the kid, Newson is the driver.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He walked to the back of the train to look for a newspaper. He did not find one and spent his time reading the advertisements on the walls at the rear of the train instead.
Buddy, no. You had one job.
No. Yeah. Yep. I get the, you know, I can only imagine in this scenario where you've had, you know,
the underground has been, runs.
Yeah. And it's been open for like 100 years at this point and 12 people have died or whatever. I don't know. It's like, it's just not, accidents don't happen.
No.
And so you get lulled into a sense of complacency, right?
Safety. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So while he was at the back, Newson continued to drive. But at 8:46 a.m., as the train approached the Moorgate station, it did not slow.
Mm-mm.
The speed limit for the trains at the time was 40 miles per hour until it arrived at the station, and then it was to slow at a maximum of 10 miles an hour.
40 miles an hour is very fast.
It is very fast. Yeah. Well, and even 10 miles an hour is approaching a station feels kind of fast.
Yeah.
You know.
Big time.
But on this day, Newson completely blew through the stop with more than 300 passengers on board.
Oh, here we go.
People waiting to get on the train witnessed it speed by. One passenger waiting on the platform said he could see Newson driving and he looked, quote, to be staring straight ahead and to be somewhat larger than life.
Oh, boy.
I know.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but it's so creepy.
It really is.
Well, and imagine, especially like after witnessing a crash, like how your brain is like, you just like, who knows what neurons fire in that instance? Like, The signalman on duty later reported that the train appeared to be accelerating as it passed along the platform.
Nope.
Just seconds after speeding past platform 9, the train crashed into the end wall of the Moorgate line.
Holy shit.
When all was said and done, 43 people died from the crash and 74 were injured.
Ugh.
It is considered the worst peacetime accident in the history of the London Underground.
Wow.
And that is all. Just kidding.
Yeah, the end. Enjoy your ruined day.
Right. When rescue workers arrived at the crash, they found what must have looked like an impossible scene. The high rate of speed caused the six compartments of the train to pile up on themselves.
Mm-mm.
The first and second compartments were so badly crushed, they were in half of their original length. So 52 feet long down to 20 feet.
Oh my God.
Yes. They said the first compartment sort of got hit, like the it impact made it go into a V shape.
Yeah.
And then the second compartment just was like smushed.
That's very upsetting to think about that. Yes. That's possible. Yes. That's crazy. Of course it is, but still.
Right.
Yeah. It's just a big steel tube with like 15 steel beams. Yeah. You know, right. I just imagine it's like beams all the way around, but of course it's just like car material.
Right. It's like
it's got to go. Yeah.
Like an aluminum can under too much pressure. Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of like watching tornado videos. Houses seem so permanent.
Yeah. Whoop, gone. Ripped. Yeah. Yep.
The third compartment rode over the rear of the second. The London Fire Brigade, Ambulance Service, and the City of London Police all came to the aid of survivors. It took them 13 hours to remove the injured.
Oh, I bet. Oh, God.
The long, slow process involved the rescuers squeezing through impossibly tight spaces, and many of the survivors had to be cut free from the wreckage. After the crash, no other trains ran during the recovery and cleanup, which caused problems for the rescuers as well. Normally, as the trains run through the underground tunnels, it causes a piston effect, which pushes fresh air into the station. But without other trains running, the ventilation underground was terrible, and temperatures in the tunnel rose to over 49 degrees Celsius or 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, man. Uh-uh. Mm-mm. For 13 hours?
That's just to get the survivors out. To make matters worse, the station had been left in complete darkness.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Engulfed by dust and soot.
Yep.
Once the survivors were saved, the crew started removing the remains of those who did not survive. Mm. The articles I read talked about how they would remove, you know, get all of the survivors they could find and then have to, like, get completely silent and ask for more survivors to call out. And then once it was completely silent for long enough, they knew they had, were able to get everybody alive out.
Fucking worst job ever. Mm-mm. Worst week of a lot of people's lives.
Oh, I cannot imagine.
No, that's so unbelievably eerie.
Yeah. Once the survivors were saved, the crew started removing the remains of those who did not survive. It would take them 4 days to finally get to the driver's cab to remove Newson's remains.
Wow. No surprise there.
No. The cab had been crushed so badly, it went from being 3 feet deep to only 6 inches deep.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry. I know. Ugh. The only journalist allowed into the tunnel during the recovery operation described the scene as, quote, a horrible mess of limbs and mangled iron.
Yeah.
As if this wasn't all hard enough, someone called in a bomb threat while the crew was cleaning up the wreckage, so they all had to evacuate the area until they could be sure it was a hoax.
That person's the worst person.
The worst person.
Like, what kind of teenage bullshit is that?
People are awful. Yes,
people are chaos makers is really what it comes down to. Some people want to make chaos.
Yep. Ugh. The people who survived were mostly the ones who had been in the back of the train when it crashed, but those who survived in the front compartments were said to be heaped among the dead. Quote, intertwined amongst themselves, the dead and the wreckage. One survivor, a young policewoman, was rescued from the front of the train, but had to have her foot amputated by doctors while still inside the compartment.
You are really pushing the limit today, Eck. You are taking it to my absolute limit. What a horror show.
Mm-hmm. I know. I knew what I was doing when I was doing it. God. I'm sorry. Because the train was 70 feet underground, the rescuers' radios didn't work, and they had to send runners to get supplies for those in the tunnel. This led to miscommunications and delays, like the worst game of telephone I can ever imagine.
Yep.
One article mentioned a doctor who was helping treat the injured still stuck in the train, who asked a runner to get more painkilling gas called Entonox. But by the time the request reached the surface, the message became, the doctor wants an empty box.
Oh, come on. No. Oh, my lordy.
Awful.
Yeah. It's
awful.
I mean, we did a Patreon episode about the, like, mass hallucinations that occur in situations like this, let alone just, like, miscommunications. Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't imagine being a doctor, like, needing pain relief for your this awful situation and waiting however long it takes.
Yeah. Several
and
hours
they,
or
somebody
whatever.
Somebody brings you an empty box. Like,
so.
Oh, my God.
No.
Despite these terrible conditions, the vast majority of the rescuers had to be forced to stop and take breaks.
I bet.
They were desperate to help as many people as they could as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
During the 13-hour rescue mission, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation was needed to save 2 people, and 2 victims died. Oh, Courtney, you might just want to, like, close your ears, but 2 victims died of crush syndrome soon after being freed from the wreckage. And crush syndrome is caused by being crushed by a heavy weight for an extended period of time. It usually needs to be like 4 to 6 hours minimum. The cells in the body are being crushed and deprived of oxygen, causes them to start producing large amounts of lactic acid. The lack of oxygen also causes the cell walls to start breaking down and release their contents into the body.
Oh my God.
So then after the person is freed, their blood starts to move through their body normally again, which also brings all of the toxic waste with it.
Ugh.
Victims of crush syndrome aren't able to process all the waste at once, and it causes their organs to shut down.
It's like feeding a starving person.
Yes.
Is a thing that can save them. That sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When all was said and done, the rescue and cleanup crew consisted of 1,324 firefighters, 240 police officers, 80 EMS workers, 16 doctors, and several nurses.
Wow.
The Moorgate line resumed normal operations 10 days after the crash.
That's nuts. It's
so crazy. Authorities said the fatalities could have been much worse because students from the City of London School for Girls usually took that particular train to school in the mornings, but luckily the school was closed that day.
Holy miracle.
Yes. Thank be to the powers above.
Seriously.
Javier Gonzalez, who survived the crash, told BBC, quote, "As darkness came, there was a very loud noise, metal and glass breaking, no screams, all in the fraction of the second one takes to breathe in. It was all over in no time."
Yeah, I cannot imagine. Ugh,
gives yep. me so many chills.
Yep. That's good, though. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, mm-hmm. if you're going to die that way or go through something like that, like, that's just... have it done.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. No anticipation whatsoever.
No, exactly.
Many survivors spent weeks in the hospital recovering from their injuries and had a lifetime of troubles.
No, I can't. No. Nope.
So Lieutenant Colonel Ian McNaughton, like the most British name I can think of.
Truly.
Who is the chief inspecting officer of railways, because of course he was with a name like that.
Yep. I was gonna, he either like manufactures biscuits or... inspects railways. Totally. Or pocket watches, something to do with That's pocket right. watches.
Yeah, so he was the chief inspecting officer of railways at the time of the crash, was put in charge of the investigation. Investigators interviewed witnesses and survivors of the crash. Harris, the guard on duty that day, told detectives how he'd left his post to find a newspaper. Well, at least he was honest.
Mm-hmm.
On his way back, he suddenly realized that the train was approaching Moorgate too fast. And as the thought moved through his mind, he said he was thrown to the floor.
Wow.
Investigators looked over every inch of the train and found all the important mechanisms to be in good working order. The emergency brake was never applied, and the dead man's handle was still depressed at the time of the crash.
What is the dead man's handle?
Let me tell you.
Oh, please. Thank you very much.
So a dead man's handle is a safety mechanism, like the handle of a lawnmower, that will cause a machine, or in this case a train, to turn off if the operator lets go for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine that, right?
Jamming down on it. Yep.
Yeah, so you have to hold it.
Yep.
And you can picture, like, if you think of a traditional train, how there's like that
little, you know, a lever.
And that's the dead man's handle. So it's designed to have to be compressed to keep the train moving.
To push the bar that pushes the train forward.
Exactly. Yep. Yep, and then I think you use that to go fast and slow, but don't quote me because I don't know.
My mind seems like that's what I've seen them doing in there.
Right.
A lot of cartoon, probably. Yeah, exactly. Sadie's wiggling her hands back and forth like she's holding levers, which we've always called them levers.
Levers.
Well, we've never called them levers in this family.
Nope, levers. So because Newson was still holding the handle tightly when he crashed, it proved that he hadn't been unconscious when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It also showed he had done nothing as he faced certain death.
Mm-hmm. Stroke? Heart attack?
Maybe. So an autopsy...
Seizure?
An autopsy showed Newson had no physical conditions, like a stroke or heart attack, that would have caused the crash. Newson's blood alcohol level was elevated, but still within legal limit, and medical examiners believed this was caused by decomposition.
Wow.
Because it took 4 days to remove Newson's body from the train, and the temperature was so warm in the tunnel.
That makes sense.
Yep. And there was some disagreement amongst medical professionals saying some of them said no, he was definitely drinking, and others said no, this could totally be just a natural process in the body during decomposition.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've never thought about that, but that totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. There is no evidence of liver damage from heavy drinking, and Newson's widow told investigators her husband only drank occasionally. Mm-hmm. Newson was described as a quiet man with, quote, orderly habits, not a sickly man, nor a daydreamer, not a runner of red lights when driving a car, or someone to know to drink excessively. Mm-hmm. That's all one quote. Those were not my words. Those that were close to him said that he was not depressed and that he loved his job. So as part of the job, Newson underwent regular health checkups and always passed them without trouble. He had only ever used 2 sick days the entire time he worked for the London Underground.
Wow.
The only other record in his personnel file was a report filed 8 months before the crash that noted Newson had helped a woman on his train who was being harassed by another passenger. The passenger ended up assaulting Newson, and he suffered a cut on his eye and bruising to his cheek. Mm-hmm. So, like, just a real straight dude.
Yeah, like every guy you imagine who runs the fucking underground.
Yeah, and I'll post a picture, of course, but, like, he looks exactly like you would, like you're picturing in your head.
Yep.
You know. Investigators looked into the possibility that Newson had used the train to die by suicide. In his report, McNaughton said he didn't believe that Newson had crashed the train on purpose, stating that he had plans for later that day and had successfully ran the route 2.5 hours before the crash. Mm-hmm. It was also noted that Newson kept a notebook to record how to deal with train defects as they came up and notes on how to be a better driver.
Right.
He had even covered both his notebooks and train manual in plastic to protect them.
Ugh, come on.
No.
He's the guy that you want to buy a house from.
See, like, I was thinking, yeah, he reminds me of our grandpa. Like,
yeah, exactly. You go so into the house.
Orderly.
Mm-hmm. They have like all their service records written down in a notebook and they like laminate them to sell you the house kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. Yes. McNaughton wrote in his report that this notebook, quote, underlined the fact that motorman Newson conducted himself in a most conscientious manner in respect of his job on the railway. Mm-hmm. But others, including Harris, the kid, the guard kid, disagreed and told investigators that Newson had overshot Platform 9 on a few occasions leading up to the day of the crash, and an expert on death by suicide later testified about the overshoots, saying, quote, that does not sound like misjudgment to me. That sounds like a man who is getting the feeling of how to run a train into a wall.
Interesting.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They also looked into whether it was possible for Newson to be daydreaming or so distracted that he did not realize the train was coming to the end of the line. Mm-hmm. The track was designed with a scissor crossing to signal that the station was coming and to act as an alert for the driver to stop the train. Mm-hmm. It would have been enough to snap Newson out of his daydream if that was the case.
Right.
Because Newson did not raise his hands reflectively to shield his face, they also considered the theory that he may have had a condition where his brain continued to function and he remained aware, but wasn't able to move his body.
Well, that's what I was thinking, maybe like a petite mal seizure. I had an ex who had petite mal seizures, and she would just sort of space out. Mm-hmm. Like, she would be there, like, having a conversation. It would just sort of space out and then come back, you know, for a second. And she would, like, be playing basketball or whatever would happen,
right?
Stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you didn't get enough sleep, if she drank too much, if she, you know, like, it was kind of stress-related or she didn't take good care of herself, essentially, she could trigger them. And, yeah, it was the weirdest thing. She would just sort of zone out and then come back. And it took a long time for people to figure out, especially this was like in the mid-90s when I knew her. You know, it had taken forever for people. They just thought she was spacey, you know, just thought she was like spacing out because it didn't last long enough for her to feel like she was like seriously losing time. But it was disruptive enough, you know, that they figured it out after a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if that would be, you know, maybe he's a man in the 70s.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to admit that happens or doesn't really realize it happens.
Yeah, like something along those lines, you know, maybe a little narcolepsy or a little, you know, there's plenty of neurological things that can happen that can
kind of short-circuit you.
Yeah, or a panic attack or something, you know, something that's that's disruptive enough to make you not be able to function and do something really important like driving a train, mm-hmm. but isn't disruptive enough to make you admit and want to lose your job, you know, in particular.
Right.
Because if you have epilepsy, you're not going to continue to be able to drive a train or a car for that matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was no way to prove if he had any of those sorts of conditions. Even if they could detect something happening in his brain, it was too badly decomposed for testing. Almost a year after the crash, on March 4th, 1976, McNaughton published his report and concluded that all tests showed no equipment was faulty on the train and that the dead man's handle had no defect. Mm-hmm. Investigators found no electrical burns on Newsom's skin or clothing to indicate an electrical malfunction. McNaughton wrote that because of Harris's lack of experience, there wasn't anything he would have been able to do to stop the train or to stop the accident from happening, despite not being at his post, but did mention that Harris, quote, displayed himself as idle and undisciplined, which is a very nice way to put it.
McNaughton. Yeah, that's very 70s British way to
present
information.
He concluded that, quote, the accident was solely due to a lapse on the part of the driver, Motorman Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
So one other much more out there theory that I just couldn't help but throw in here.
Yep, lay it on me.
That comes up when looking into the case is the Phantom of Moorgate Station.
Okay.
Legend has it that, quote, a few weeks before the accident during the winter of 1974 to 75, workmen carrying out repairs at the station reported that they often saw a man dressed in blue overalls walking toward them in the tunnel at night.
Uh-huh.
At first, they assumed he was a fellow worker, but as he approached, they were terrified to see that his face bore a look of indescribable horror.
Okay, now, wow. We've already gone to indescribable horror today, Sadie. We don't necessarily need...
another...
No, and I can only imagine what that looks like. I'm picturing The Ring, the girl from The Ring. Or like what people look like after they watch the video in The Ring. That's what I'm picturing.
Yes.
Ugh.
As they watched, the figure of the man carried on along the track before vanishing into the tunnel wall.
Mm-hmm. It's 10 o'clock in the morning where I am living, and I'm going to pee-pee my pants.
Yeah. Some believe the ghost was that of a maintenance worker who was killed by a train on that stretch of the line many years before. After the Moorgate disaster, many newspapers learning of the ghost sighting reported that Newsom may have seen the ghost on February 28th, which caused him to have a lapse in concentration causing the tragic accident.
That would do it for me, man. That would put me right into the paralysis of fear of undescribable horror face coming barreling toward me.
Right, walking through walls and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm guessing that's probably not what caused this accident.
Probably not.
I can't help but to touch on some ghosts.
Well, and one has to wonder where, like, neurological disorders and mental illness conditions and the supernatural and all those things sort of come together in a terrible, what's the circle, overlapping circle table
Venn
called
diagram
Venn, mm-hmm. Venn diagram, yeah, like of awfulness that would cause a catastrophe,
right?
I guess there's a lot of overlapping circles in the middle there.
Yes. Yep. And just a little side note, something that I was thinking about while researching this story was, and it's a trigger warning, but I'm going to just talk about briefly about suicide.
Yeah.
Is that there's a lot of common misunderstandings surrounding death by suicide. And although we will never know what caused Newsom to crash the train into the wall that day, if he did decide to take his own life, there may have been zero warning signs, right?
Right.
So it's a common misconception that there are clear warning signs that someone is planning to die by suicide.
Yep.
Families who lose loved ones this way often feel awful that they didn't see it coming and did nothing to stop it, when in reality, there's often nothing to see.
Mm-hmm.
So experts say that dying by suicide is most often an impulse decision rather than something that is planned out well in advance. And we talk so much more about the planning. You know, I think it gives us a little bit of comfort. Like if we keep a close enough eye on our loved ones, we'll be able to stop it or help them. Mm-hmm. And that is true. You know, I don't want to downplay that, but I also just, I mean, I guess if there's listeners out there that have lost loved ones, you know, by suicide, that they get a little comfort in knowing that there's likely not much you could do to help them.
Yeah. Laura was actually I don't know how this came up recently, but she was listening to a podcast or something talking about specifically that and about how survivors of suicide have often said that it was like a moment of madness. Mm-hmm. You know, like they were, you know, depressed or stressed or whatever, and they just had this sort of immediate moment of madness and immediately regretted it. Mm-hmm. And so those who have survived said, I'm so glad I survived because the second I started doing what I was doing, I wanted to not be doing what I was doing.
Yep,
like it
exactly.
was a, yeah, it was like a brain sizzle and I was doing this and then mm-hmm. was like, holy shit, what are you thinking? You know? Ugh, and then it was, yeah.
So scary.
Yeah. So scary and so sad, but it makes sense, especially if you're a middle-aged man in the 70s in the UK. Like we all know that Brits love to talk about their feelings,
you know? Right?
Like yeah. British men in, you know, like working class sort of positions, respected working class position. Like these people are not going to discuss what's going on in their lives and in their inside of themselves. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it would definitely fit a profile in my untrained and unprofessional mind.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that my next sentence was that just that it, mm-hmm. impulsive suicide attempts, people who try, you know, just it's sort of an impulse reaction. They survive. The statistics show that they really don't ever try again. It was that moment of madness.
Yep.
And then they don't, they're not actually suicidal. They don't want to end yep. their own lives.
Yep.
So it's possible that Newson, for whatever reason, on a terrible impulse, decided to crash the train. Or it could be, like you said, that he, mm-hmm. you know, you just never really know what a person's experiencing on the inside. And he probably, if he was dealing with depression or whatever, was very good at covering.
Yeah. Or a medical issue. Like maybe he did know that he had a medical issue and mm-hmm. was depressed about that. Or, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. Again, the Venn diagram of reasons that this could have happened is sort of endless mm-hmm. In my imagination.
Yep. So unfortunately, if this is true, he took many other lives with him.
Yeah.
And that's the only the reason why he seems like a dutiful guy, you know, but again, if it was just a moment of madness and he was like, oh, okay, I'm done, this is it. Mm-hmm. He's not thinking of anything other than himself at that point.
Totally. Right? Well, it would make sense that you would just wait until your last drive of the day and drive mm-hmm. it, you drive your own self into the wall and not, you know, during service when the train mm-hmm. is full of people. Yeah.
Right.
It's, but again, you know, you just never ever know what people are going through.
They never do.
Never know what he heard right before he got on the train. You never know. You just never know.
Yeah.
And we will never know. And that is sucky.
Yeah. Well, and I remember I was thinking about this too when writing the story about how, especially when I first got my license, mm-hmm. I would have a lot of intrusive thoughts of like,
oh yeah,
I could just crash into this other car. Like it was so baffling to me that could, like we just drive around in these like metal boxes and that I could just literally bump, like done. I could just run into people.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to do that, but I could mm-hmm. see that sort of momentary, like, fuck it, you know,
this is it.
I'm going to see what happens. Feeling. Yeah,
totally. You feel powerful. If you don't feel powerful and suddenly you do feel powerful, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Who knows? We'll never know. Mm-hmm. So after the crash, the London Underground implemented more safety systems to prevent future accidents from happening. They installed timed train stops were installed at any station at the end of the lines. These devices would electronically apply the train's emergency brakes if they passed a certain point going too fast.
Brilliant. Perfect.
Yeah, I know. I was like, too bad didn't do it a little sooner.
Mm-hmm.
After family and friends of the victims worked hard and petitioned those in charge for decades to honor their loved ones publicly, the City of London finally placed a memorial plaque at Finsbury Square in 2013.
Wow.
2013.
Wow. Speaking of not talking about your emotions.
Right? That's what I was thinking. Like, come on, guys.
Brits are tidy people. They're tidy people. Just
It's all, let's just sweep it back into the tunnels of the underground.
Yeah, yeah. Americans are not tidy people.
No, we're like, let's build the buildings back and light them up with lights.
Yeah.
The plaque lists the names of the victims of the crash and reads, quote, "In memory of the 43 people who died as a result of the tragic accident at Moorgate Underground Station on February 28, 1975, and in tribute to the brave members of the emergency service and survivors never forgotten."
Oh, buddies, God, unreal.
Unreal. And that's why you never go on subway trains.
I cannot tell you. Whenever I'm sitting in the New York City MTA, I'm just down there. Like, I am at the mercy of so many awful things that could happen right now. And my little brain goes immediately there.
Me too. I have
pretty severe claustrophobia, and that's terrifying. And I actually, over the weekend, read a story about a man who got stuck in a cave in Utah. And did not get out of that cave and is still in that cave despite many, many, many people coming and trying to get, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll cover this for Patreon. And then I proceeded to ruin my day and the following day by reading that story. And I spared the people, Sadie.
I know, I'm sorry.
I just moved along with my life and thought I can't take them there. And then here I am with my sister, who's a subway demon made up of unspeakable horrors, who wants me to now know that those things happen confirm that those things happen. So you can go fuck yourself.
You know, good news is it's incredibly rare.
Yeah.
And it seems like it really just has to be a total lapse of whatever, almost on purpose for it to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to talk about those things and think about those things as much as we don't want to, because people suffer and who knows, medically, psychologically, physically, something happened to that man that probably he needed help and didn't get the help that he needed one way or another. So good story though. I mean,
thank you.
Horribly awful, but also a really good story.
Yeah. I'll post the names of the victims and so sorry for their families.
To have to go through something like that, to have to know that your family would go through something like that. And for those people who survived, just sending endless healing and peace to get through a day after going through something like that. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I'm running a little late on time because when we shoot these, I guess we are shooting them technically.
Yeah,
we're also shooting our faces. When we record these in the morning, I also have jobs and lives to do, and so does my sister. So only going to do half of the names that y'all sent in today, but you sent in some damn doozies. So here we go, guys. It's name time. And if you're new here, go back to the Charlotte Grabby episode and you'll understand why I read funny names every week. Name time. So first, but also best. Just kidding. I don't know that this is, there's in no particular order.
Right.
The guy who wrote the Chili's baby back ribs jingle is named Guy Bomarito. You get born, right? You get born with the name Guy Bomarito and you're like, what is my destiny? And it's baby back.
For those of you that don't have a Chili's around, there's a song. You can look it up. I'm sure it's on the internet. Chili's.
Yeah.
Baby back.
I feel like that's
universal.
Yeah. Maybe for very young, maybe for very early Gen Z, you don't know, or late Gen Z, I guess, you wouldn't know that. But Guy Bomarito.
Oh, my God.
Brilliant. Maisie sent us that. Thank you, Maisie. You know exactly what we're looking for in this world. There's a vasectomy doctor in Milwaukee, Dr. Slocum. Spelled S-L-O-C-U-M. Dr. Slocum. I swear it.
Does he know? Does he know about this?
Does now. Portland musician Borfus Wallaby. Which, yes, there is. Of course there's a Portland musician named Borfus.
What does he play?
Wallaby. He plays the fucking theremin. Are you kidding? I have no idea. He plays the melodica or the theremin or, like, he invented a machine that he processes his voice through, you know? Mm-hmm. Borfus.
Borfus. That's amazing. Good for you. What do you use to as a nickname? Bor?
Borfus. Borfy. Yep. Bor.
That's amazing.
Somebody's friend got married to a guy with the last name Cherbuck, and they got pregnant, and everybody was joking that the baby's name would be Herbert. And I don't think the baby's name is Herbert, but they call the baby Herbert Cherbuck. Let's be friends with those people.
Cute. Yeah, seriously.
Somebody was on a Zoom meeting with Ms. Pancake and Dr. Waffle.
I can't. We're done. Goodbye.
Yep.
Yep, how do I get on that Zoom
call? Only Zoom meeting I ever want to be on, ever.
Whoever submitted those names, can you enter a Zoom call and nobody knows it? And I could just like relish in being next to a Dr. Pancake and a Mrs. Waffle or whatever.
I have watched enough internet-based horror to know that you can. I don't know how you do it, but you can. And then you can take control of them demonically. Yes. And then kill them off one by one. And none of them can leave, because then you're definitely going to kill them. So
I'm
not
ready.
Only should you join the Zoom call with Ms. Pancake and Dr. Waffle, but then you should demonically
possess them.
Mm-hmm. Murder. And then slam them into walls and stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I could do that.
I love like chat horror. I love it. I will never get sick of it.
No. Real quick, have you everyone seen the video of the woman? I think it's a doctor's like Zoom call. A doctor or her boss or somebody. She has a potato filter.
No, I've seen the cat filter, the deposition where the lawyer shows up as a cat.
It's like that, but this woman. No. I think it might be a Zoom call with a doctor, and she can't turn off the potato filter.
Zoom over there doing the Lord's work with those filters. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing. Damn it.
Are you feeling okay? Yeah, it's just a potato.
Potato. I'm a potato. Okay. Couple place names, and then we'll move on to Sadie's story of how she's a questionable parent. And then we'll do some shouty outies.
Yay.
There's Busta Rhymes Island. I don't know if he purchased the island and named it after himself. I don't know if someone else very wealthy purchased the island and named it after Busta, but there is Busta Rhymes Island. There is Boning Island. There is Stupid Lake.
God, that's where I live.
That's exactly where I live. And in the middle of Stupid Lake, not really, but there's Piss Pot Island.
What?
Yes.
I just am picturing all of those islands right next to each other in a line, like the Hawaiian islands. But
Yeah, it would make sense that Busta Rhymes Island, Boning Island, and Piss Pot Island were a, what it's on a metropolis, what's it called? God bless it. When it's a...
Isle.
Not a peninsula, not a... Guys, help me. Help
Keys.
Me. Send me the... like a Keys, but there's like a word for... Anyway, yes, it's the Keys. It's the... If Indiana had a Keys, it would be Busta Rhymes Island, Boning Island, and Piss Pot Island.
And Stupid Lake. Inside of Stupid Lake.
Love Stupid Lake. Is almost as good as Alcohol and Drug Abuse Lake, which so many people have sent us.
Yes.
And I never get... I laugh every time I see Alcohol and Drug Abuse Lake. Every time.
Me too.
So tell the people about how you're a shitty mom.
Oh my God. Okay. So yeah, don't come at me. It's one of those things. A little vulnerable just happened.
Yeah.
Okay. So my oldest child is at a baseball camp this week, and his most favorite thing at baseball camp is going to the cafeteria without his mother, where there's a soda fountain. He did this camp last year. He's back again this year. Mm-hmm. He's been looking forward to it for a year. He's going to get whatever soda he wants, because his mom can't tell him no. And so he goes to camp yesterday and comes home, and I was like, how's camp? And he was like, awful. They wouldn't let us just have any soda. We had to pick between like Gatorade and lemonade or whatever. Huge deal. Really bummed.
Yeah. Which is a smart decision for the camp to restrict sodas.
I was shocked actually last year when they were letting them go crazy with the soda. But whatever.
Yeah, they must have gotten plenty of complaints about that.
Yeah, like his coach was like, "No, we don't want you puking on the field or whatever." And I was like, "That's probably exactly what happened." So, anyway, really bummer. He loves baseball, but all he could think about was this bummer of a soda deal. Mm-hmm. And so, when Ryan came home from work, my child told him the same story and was like crying about it. And Ryan came to me and he was like, you know, I worry that he's going to, as an adult, be so hung up on soda that he's going to just like binge drink soda and start doing drugs or whatever. Cause it's not really, but you know, and we were talking about it. We're trying to like neutralize food and do the whole like healthy body, healthy food associations, whatever, like where there isn't like good food and bad food. Yeah. And I was like, well, maybe we should just do that with soda, make it less of a big deal. Like not all the time, but more, you know, like you can just have it more, a little more regularly.
Yeah.
And that felt like in the moment, a good decision. I understand that soda is not good for you. I know that it's not good for kids. So don't like, please don't come at me. I really, this is a huge deal for me.
Sadie and I were very restricted from sugar as children. And then like any chance we got, we would just fucking jam it into our faces and brains. And like that is a hard one. A very hard one. I don't very think hard I could one. Feed my child soda and feel pretty fucking awesome about it. But I get it. Like what's the answer? No one knows.
Right. No one knows. And I still don't know. Yeah. And I'm not sure what we're going to move forward because of the experience I had. So anyway, so he and I decide like, okay, we'll just start doing soda more often. So I go to my oldest child and I say, hey, do you want to go right now? And we'll just go to the store and you can pick out whatever soda you want. And he was like, any soda? And I was like, yeah. You can't have it all right now, but you can bring it home and have some of it. Mm-hmm. And that's it. He was like, really, any soda? And I was like, yep, any soda. Mm-hmm. Quick side note, my 4-year-old got in a bouncy house accident over the weekend and has a humongous black eye. He's fine.
Shinerama.
Like, terrifying looking. It's awful. Thank God he's okay. He really is okay, I promise. But he's got this huge black eye.
Yeah. It looks like an illustration of a child from the 50s who's like, got into a junkyard fight or something. Like,
yes.
So intense.
Yes. So I take my children to a pharmacy. It's called Walgreens, for those of you that know it. and I don't know why, but it's closest to my house. So we went there and I let them pick out soda, both of them. For the oldest child picks Mountain Dew because of course he does.
Yeah, of course he does. Of course Sadie forgot that Mountain Dew exists and she shouldn't have like maybe restricted the Mountain Dew from being a choice.
Right. But the whole point was like he could pick whatever he wanted, right?
Yeah.
So he picks Mountain Dew. I am now in the store with my children, one of which is very young with a black eye and they have soda. And I am feeling like the worst mother in the world that has ever existed. I am so embarrassed and questioning my choices.
Yeah.
And then we go
questioning your choices. Just kidding. But also, if I saw you in that store, I would be like,
judging.
I really try not to judge. I'm fully judging this woman right now.
Yes. We go up to the cashier and she takes one look at the soda children and the black eye and is like, is he okay? Good for her for standing up. She was like, walked around, got down and was like, honey, are you okay? And my 4-year-old is shy and does not like to talk to strangers and would not talk to her. And so I was like, oh, you know, it's a bouncy house accident, but already feeling guilty of, anyway, it was this whole thing. And lesson learned, he could not sleep last night after having even just a little bit of Mountain Dew. And in the morning, I thought, okay, lesson learned, because he said last night, I shouldn't have had it. I can't sleep. I thought, okay, he's understood that Mountain Dew is a no-no.
Yeah.
And then this morning he said, Mom, I think instead of having Mountain Dew at night, I'll just have it in the morning from now on.
Which confirms for me that he is my nephew and we have blood relation, because that is the kind of negotiating that I do and have done my entire life. Like, I just had a really bad experience with this, but I also really like it. So how can I figure out how to work it into my life in a slightly more, healthy is not the word, functional way.
Right. Yes. So I think if you guys have tips, like I said, I don't want to be told that that was dumb. What I would like to be told is how do you guys deal with things like that? Like things yeah. that I would just rather, like, should I just restrict it completely and like make them be crazy for soda? Should I have a little bit of soda in the house every once in a while and they can have like a drink of it?
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Yeah. And maybe like a Sprite or a Hansen's or some.
Well, that's usually like that. What we do. You know, it's yeah. not like they've never had soda before, but they get to have, like, if we go out to eat, they get to have a Sprite or whatever. Yeah. It's not like they're completely restricted. I don't plan to have it around. We don't do juice. You know, it's just like, I don't know how, I don't know. I think understand part of
it too is like your oldest. I can say this because we share a brain. His sort of advanced maturity is going to make him want that sort of jacked up experience of having a free for all. It's just like, it feels cool. It feels grown up, you know, mm-hmm. he's just like me. I mean, I started drinking coffee when I was 12 years old, mm-hmm. which I don't recommend to, you know, people to allow their children to do. But I was like, it was so sophisticated. And I'd pour a cup of my parents' Folgers, you know, but
like gross.
I think it probably comes down to just having, like, I know you do, conversations about with him about healthy choices and like making those decisions for himself and like what that means and the consequences of it and stuff, because he's going to mm-hmm. find a way to work that stuff into his life just like right. I did. But if he knows that, then you are going to feel bad or you're not going to be able to sleep or like these are the things mm-hmm. that are going to happen and your body doesn't metabolize it very well, you know, if you just have like honest conversations about what that means for him so that when those things are happening, he's able to identify it. Because I think when mm-hmm. kids just sort of willy-nilly become, like, their DNA becomes fused with Mountain Dew and then they don't know what that means, you know, growing up, like,
right.
I think that's when it becomes like a serious problem. But I think, you know, I knew what sugar did. I knew, like, just medically, you know, that sugar was bad for you. And so I've always had I definitely wouldn't say unhealthy, but I'm aware of when sugar is in my body, you know, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's what that is. And so I think that's helpful. And mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, I don't care that I'm going to feel like shit, you know,
right.
just like most of us do. Like, this is right. probably gonna make me feel bad when I'm going to do it anyway, or no, that's gonna make me feel bad, so I'm going to not do that. Or I'm just going to yeah. do a little bit of it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't been seeing my therapist regularly. I haven't really needed it, but I had a check-in with her. Was that just last week? And she's just so helpful. But we were talking about parenting and like,
yep.
just how hard it is and how do you protect your kids, basically. And she said, you know, mm-hmm. your job isn't to protect them. It's to offer them perspective when something mm-hmm. bad happens.
Exactly.
Yes. And it blew my mind open. She was like, you know, honestly, a lot of kids who are very sheltered in life go on to like marrying narcissists or other yeah. people, like, and that's all she had to say. And I was like, hell, let's just do it all, like, go have terrible times with friends and get traumatized by the shitty church down the street or whatever, like,
yes, totally.
Because I want you to learn now while you have your mom to help yep. you process those experiences. And so
exactly, yeah, right.
I think the Mountain Dew was an illustration of that.
Yeah, like, okay, let's try it. And you're like, yeah. But you know what? Fucking first prize, big, giant good job to the Walgreens worker who actually,
oh, yeah.
like,
she really
said something and like yes. asked him if he was okay. I mean, that mm-hmm. is, I'm very proud of that person.
Me too. I told her, I said, you know, proud. I really appreciate you checking in with him. I really, mm-hmm. really do. And yeah. I've got like a gaggle. He was at a church event with my parents. Like, I have a gaggle of church ladies
who witnessed it.
Prove yeah. that he was not being hit by his mama.
Yeah.
And now I'm making up for it by letting them drink soda.
Yeah. So,
yep. And if you're worried, the 4-year-old did not get Mountain Dew. No. That was a no.
Parenting is impossible, and I don't know how anybody does it.
I don't know either.
We'll never know. Yeah. No one will. It's weird that everyone does it. It's weird.
Definitely one of those times where I was like, okay, I tried that out as a mom and mm-hmm. I did not like the way it felt. So we're going to have to figure out another way to mm-hmm. to do soda in moderation.
Yep.
So anyway.
Anyway, let's do some shouty-outies.
These are our patrons who yep. support us.
They sure do. And thank you and for doing it.
Yes. We recently sent out goodies. If you feel like you should have received them and have not yet, let me know.
Yep.
But I don't think I'm behind. I don't think I left anybody out, unless you just joined.
Right.
Then you're going to have to wait a year, like everybody else. Thank you so much to Lindsay D.
Lindsay Dynastema. That's not what I meant to say. Diaspora is what I meant to say. Not the space between your teeth, but the all of the world and the pop culture and the times. And diaspora in my approximation means that you are everything swirling around and telling the future what the past was about. And that's what Lindsay D does. She tells everyone what it was because she embodies everything anyone would want to know about it.
Yes.
Diaspora. It's a great word. I don't know. The heavens and the goddesses sent me that one about you, Lindsay D, because
yeah, where did that word come from?
Sorry, diastema was the first thing to come out, which I'd love. And if you have one, then maybe I meant to say diastema.
That's because right.
I really fucking am jealous anytime I come across a diastema.
No, Ryan has one, and my oldest child will definitely have one, and I just...
It's the best. It's there's the like nothing. Best. I mean, give us a get something sexier. Can you name something sexier than a diastema? No.
Nope.
So if you have one and you're not Lindsay D, if you're not Lindsay Diaspora, and you have one, congratulations.
You I'm win. Jealous.
Yep. But if you are Lindsay Diastema, then you're also Lindsay Diaspora.
Thank you so much to Tracy U.
Tracy Universe in the universe. Lindsay is the diaspora, and Tracy is the universe. And these two are working together to put it all together and take you there and take you everywhere because she can, because she is. She's universal. She is the universe. And if you zoom out, you can see like 1,000 galaxies at one time in one photo. And that is crazy, but that's who she is. And it blows your mind.
I'm now having an existential crisis.
Yeah, just show me that photo. I came across my fucking social media again yesterday, and it gives me the shivers. It gives you just so cool. So congratulations, so cool. Tracy Universe made up 1,000 galaxies in one fucking photo. That's who you are, swirling around. It's sparkling everywhere.
Thank you so much to Leanna R.
Leanna is the record of all time. She has recorded everything in time and lined it up, but then also said, you know what? It's not actually a line. It's flat. It's everything everywhere. It never ends, and it's all around us, and I am it, and I am all of time in one person. I embody everything. I'll tell you about it and teach you that there is no then or in the future. It's always now. I am now. I am all of recorded time. That is a great thing to be. Come along inside of me because I am time, and it's everywhere, and it never ends, and it's a big flat circle, and that's really fucking cool.
Lord. And last but certainly not least, thank you so much to Cecilia F.
Cecilia. Future. Cecilia. Finality. Cecilia. Fuck yeah, because she knows that that's not true. There is no finality. There is no future because she is buddies with recorded time, and they hold hands together and they give you this rhyme. They say everything is everything all of the time, and we know it and we show it, and you got to believe us that you don't have to be so stressed out because nothing is real and everything is real, and we can tell you about it because we are it, and that's pretty fucking badass.
Yes.
So thank you to our four new Patreons who embody the universe, the diaspora, and all of recorded time, and the fact that there is no beginning or end.
Right.
Because these four individuals are just, they just are. They are that. And so you meet them and you're like, well, fuck, man. I got it all figured out now that I've met these four individuals because shit.
Shit. Cool. Shit, dude.
Awesome. I feel so much better.
I want to get them in the room together now, and they can come on my Zoom call where I turn into a demon and kill everyone so I can be with them.
Yes.
It's all about me.
Yeah. They could probably teach you how to do it, how to possess other people. They got their shit together enough to be able to do that.
Sweet. If you're waiting for a shout out, we are going to make our way through it. We haven't forgotten you. Courtney's got to go to her day job, so we'll get to you.
Also, I like a, you know, quality, not quantity. I want to make them good. And so after a while,
I don't know how quickly, you do it.
My brain starts to lose the thread.
That's right.
When you're talking about quantum physics.
One of these days, I'll try it, and it will be awful.
No, I don't think it will. I think it'll be fucking wonderful. We should force you to do it. We love you guys so much. And if you want to come hang out with us, you can definitely find us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, or Twitter at They Will Kill. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com. You can email us at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, rate, review, subscribe, please.
Yeah.
We have had a big bump in new listeners, which is so amazing. But that brings in the haters, which I'm actually very excited about because it means our audience is growing.
Yeah.
But if you love us and you want us to succeed on Apple Podcast in particular, go over there, give us a 5-star review, some nice words.
Yeah. Just balance does it not out a little hurt. Bit.
Yeah.
Certainly does not. And thank you, AJ Bergens, for our music.
Hey, I love it so much.
Yep.
And remember,
I think I wrote one down.
Don't give your 7-year-old Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to.
Unless you're willing to suffer the consequences, and maybe CPS will get called. You don't know. I'm still waiting for the knock on my door.
Mm-hmm. Parenting is hard, and it's insane that you all do it, and it's crazy, and it'll never stop being crazy, but everyone's going to keep doing it because that's the whole point.
We love you.
We love you.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.